Chapter 23. Aspen. Groaning, Aspen winced as he tried to open his eyes. Bright light stabbed deep into his brain, and he heard a gasp from beside his bed. Strong, calloused fingers pressed against his inner wrist, and Manuela's husky voice demanded, "What is your name?" while Silas, rising from her position on Aspen's chest, squeaked, "Aspen." "Hopefully." Aspen tried to lift an arm to press his fingers against his aching eyeballs, but found that his wrist was anchored by more than just his friend's grip. "Am I tied to the bed?" Manuela snorted, and he felt a little tension leave her fingers, but she didn't let go. "Answer the question," she ordered crisply. "I'm Aspen, Manuela. There's no one in my head that wasn't there before I idiotically decided to try cleaning Akuji's filthy soul." He managed to force one eye open against what seemed like a dagger of light, and stared up into his former partner's worried face. She was holding a shining glowstone above him, which explained the glare. "Could you please put that thing away and untie me?" Silently he continued, "I'm fine, little one. Just tired, I think." Silas moved up his chest, her small body trembling as it pressed beneath his chin. Thin lips relaxing into a small smile, Manuela lowered the stone. "It didn't look like you had any hitchhikers," she said, doubtless referring to her soul mage abilities, which granted her a skill that was similar to Aspen's life sense, but it never hurts to be certain. She began untying the ropes that had been restraining him. Aspen rolled over onto one side, cradling Silas as he rubbed at the red ring around his freed wrist. "Are you sure you aren't just indulging in some vengeance for all those times I tied you to my horse after you passed out while trying to control too many attackers?" She huffed a half-laugh as she dropped the last rope. "Maybe. You could have been a little gentler after I just saved your rear, you know." He shrugged, then struggled into a sitting position, gently shifting the little bat from his elbow to his shoulder. "There were zombies." Rubbing at his lower back, he asked, "How long was I out?" "Almost 3 days," came Sarave's musical voice from behind Manuela. The goblin woman stepped around the much taller doctor, and Aspen saw that the shadows beneath her luminous eyes were darker than they had been when last he saw them. He stretched out a hand to her, and Sarave took it in her own small, cool one. Manuela looked as though she might say something, her expression conflicted, but then stepped aside and back toward the door of the room, which looked like one of the many unused bedrooms in Sarave's new castle. She paused in the doorway. "Heal yourself, you idiot, and don't do that again." With that, she left, her firm footsteps echoing away down the hall. Aspen followed doctor's orders, and felt the warm flush of healing thrum through his body even as his mana drained sluggishly away. He clutched at his head with his free hand. "What happened?" Silas paused in her almost desperate snuggle long enough to squeak out, "You fainted. Or had comatose or something. It was super scary." Sarave, unable to hear Silas, sat down on the edge of the bed. "That's what we'd like to know. When you cast Winnow, every living thing near you went mad, and then you fell unconscious. Manuela said she could sense no injury, physical or otherwise, and yet you refused to wake. We were worried." Her fingers tightened on his hand. "Do you remember anything?" He leaned his jaw against the bat's warm, soft little body, frowning, and his brows drew together. "A dream? A vision? I don't know exactly." Akuji was there, and so was Chester, though Chester looked closer to death than the lich. Akuji said, he struggled to remember exactly, and frowned as a fresh spike of pain drove itself through his head. "I think Phantom Hat tricked him. He found another box like the one the Soul Stone was locked in, and convinced Akuji that he'd simply forgotten how to open it. Assuming that what I saw was more than just a dream, Akuji now knows that Phantom Hat has deceived him, and that we're in possession of his Soul Stone." Aspen snorted derisively before going on. The Lich Lord must still be struggling to regain himself. He'd never have trusted a subordinate enough to believe such an obvious lie before. "We tried many times to slip a spy, living or undead, into Akuji's forces, and never succeeded for more than a few days. It does explain why Phantom Hat is coming here without his master, though. The assassin will want to reclaim the box quietly, so Akuji doesn't know just how badly he failed." "That's exactly what Fart Hat would do. Bruges says he's super ego-ticklish." Aspen almost laughed aloud at the description, but silently corrected, "Egotistical, little one." Sarave frowned, then slowly said, "Then this Phantom Hat will be coming for young Rouge, won't he? As far as he knows, she still has the box, and has no idea what's inside. Unless Akuji has some way to communicate with him and lets him know that his deception has been revealed. Thoughtfully, Aspen said, Akuji used to use undead messengers or teleportation rugs to send his orders to commanders on the front lines. He's too paranoid to open his mind to anyone. From what Rouge has told me of Phantom Hat's character, he's arrogant enough that I wouldn't be surprised if he truly does come alone, or with only a select few of his minions. Now that we've blocked the pass, he won't be able to get his army through without more time. His eyes widened in realization. But if I've been unconscious for 3 days? Sarave nodded grimly. They have many mages. They've flown a few warriors around, though nothing we haven't been able to handle, while their monsters and other mages attempt to build a bridge. They're having to bring wood in from beyond Vargo, since the trees growing in the pass itself are too small for their needs. They've also been attacked by the Wyvern twice. The first time their travelers slew it fairly easily, but many of them seem to have grown bored with the delay, and the enemy camp is filled with their zombies. When the Wyvern respawned, it slew great numbers of the common cultists, as well as some of the monsters, before enough elite troops rallied to kill it. What about Beryl? She took off yesterday when the really big monsters with 5 heads started showing up. They're really ugly, and you wouldn't believe how gross it is when a giant with 5 noses gets hay fever. Silas leaned into his cheek as she inserted another aside, and he was happy to note that she was no longer shivering. The goblin shook her head. She said her task was fulfilled and she had no choice but to leave. According to your request, now that there are enough invaders to put even her life at risk, she can no longer aid us. She did say, Sarave laughed softly, that if we were still alive next spring she'd come back for a visit. Aspen smiled, glad to see the spark of humor light the small wan face. Then we'll have to be certain to be ready for guests. Cautiously, he swung his legs out of the bed, and Sarave stood as he did, though she held out her arms as if she'd try to catch his much greater bulk if he seemed ready to fall. When he was certain that he would not, in fact, topple over again, Aspen smiled down at the goblin. Is Rouge here? Sarave shook her head. She or one of the other travelers has been watching over you whenever they could, but right now she's resting in your house, and Tessel left not long ago to go to her otherworld job. I told them they could sleep in one of the rooms of this ridiculously large castle, and the others agreed, but Rouge said she was more comfortable above ground. She sounded somewhat dubious when she said this last bit, and Aspen couldn't help but chuckle. As long as she's protected by the Bluestones, she should be safe, at least until Akuji himself arrives. Phantom Hat will have to find some way to lure her out of the city if he wants to take back the box. His stomach growled loudly. Right now, he said ruefully, I think I could use one of Millie's hearty breakfasts. Sarave smiled up at him. As you wish, she said. Several hours later, Aspen peered down into the large crevasse he had opened less than a week before. In the distance, he could see what looked like hundreds of tents showing where Phantom Hat's army was camped. There was no attempt now to conceal the cultists and monsters who mingled freely with the soldiers. Black-robed people spoke to men in uniforms, while other cloaked figures guided the twisted beasts who carried or hauled wood and stones into the ravine ahead. Aspen glanced at Nekthat, who lay on his belly beside him, all but invisible in the deep shadow cast by an overhang of rock above them. How long have they been at this? The goblin didn't glance away from his eagle-eyed inspection of the forces below. Almost 2 days. They got that first bridge up within a day, but they're having a harder time with the slope up to where the rocks fell. The ground is unstable, and every time they think they've got a foundation, it just, he made a rolling motion with one hand, falls away. Aspen raised one eyebrow. So William is still down there? This time Nekthat flicked a brief, amused glance at Aspen. Yes. He won't injure anyone directly, but making their equipment sink or topple is easy enough. He says that eventually they'll fall into the cave system he's using to get here, though, and if that happens, they may realize it's easier to dig their way through rather than trying to go over. Aspen grunted understanding. How long do we have? Depends, the goblin returned grimly. Could be tomorrow, could be a month from now. They could turn up with an earth mage who can spell them up a bridge or a tunnel, or they may continue doing this forever. He smirked down at the bustling figures below, as a carefully constructed abutment sank into crumbling earth. A robed man pulled off his hood and threw it on the ground, jumping up and down on it several times in frustration. Aspen huffed a laugh, but then grew serious. When Akuji comes, our time is up. He won't let these idiots keep flailing around like fish out of water. He put his hands beneath him and started to slide backwards off the ridge of stone, but froze when he felt something sharp prick at the base of his skull. "I think your time is up now," a cold, familiar voice said, and a shudder ran down Aspen's spine. "Phantom Hat," he said flatly, even as he sent a thought out to Silas, who had insisted upon joining them on this little reconnaissance mission, and was now soaring high above the ravine, watching for any further attempts to slip small groups of attackers out of the valley. How these vampires had gotten up here in broad daylight, Aspen had no idea, but clearly they had managed to sneak past Silas' watchful gaze as well. "Silas, run. Back to refuge now and tell them." "Oh, you remember," the assassin said, and a powerful kick landed in Aspen's ribs, flipping him into the air so he tumbled roughly into Nekthat, who dropped the knife he'd been drawing from its sheath. "Aspen." Phantom Hat's cold eyes stared down into Aspen's, and he motioned to someone off to the side. Clammy hands touched Aspen, pulling him up to his knees. Beside him, Aspen could just make out black-gloved hands doing the same to Nekthat, though the goblin fought viciously against his captors. He managed to get his hands on his fallen blade, then plant it firmly in the gut of the man who held him, at which point another black-clad figure hit the back of the goblin's skull with the hilt of his own dagger, producing a loud crack of bone. Nekthat slumped to the stone and Aspen flung a heel at the fallen goblin, desperately hoping he wasn't too late. His life sense, which had utterly failed to warn of Phantom Hat and his fellow vampires, told Aspen that his friend still lived, though blood was slowly filling his cranium from the injury to his skull. "Go now, Silas," he shouted silently, and heard a tiny mental sob as the bat obeyed. Phantom Hat casually hit Aspen across the face, the powerful blow snapping his head to the side. Aspen let the force of it travel through his neck and shoulders, throwing him against the painful grip of his captors, his focus still on healing the goblin beside him. Strong fingers grasped Aspen's jaw, yanking his face around. "Look at me when I speak to you," Phantom Hat growled, and Aspen focused on the assassin long enough to let his utter contempt show in his frozen topaz gaze. The vampire flinched ever so slightly, and then thrust Aspen's face away with so much force that his neck cracked loudly. Another kick to the gut followed, but Aspen had almost been expecting it, and he braced his muscles against the blow even as he bent forward and allowed his breath to huff out explosively. He held still as Phantom Hat stepped over to look down at Nekthat, who was just beginning to stir. "You didn't kill the goblin?" A strange, slightly nervous voice answered. "That should have done it. It was a crit. I don't know why he's not dead. Want me to finish him?" Phantom Hat sounded thoughtful. "Have you tried drinking from a goblin yet?" The other man sounded disgusted. "They're nasty. I mean, drinking blood to heal is gross enough, but why did the devs have to make them taste so disgusting?" The assassin grunted. "Fine. You can bite Yorgas here then. We just need him alive to trade for the box, so don't drain him past," he paused, 50%. 50. The man sounded outraged now. "I was stabbed in the freaking stomach, man. You didn't tell me vamps automatically have their pain settings maxed, or I never would have made the race change." Aspen rolled his head just enough to be able to make out the dark shapes of the vampires as they argued. They were dressed head to toe in black leather, and Phantom Hat still wore a mask that covered the lower half of his face. Their skin was bleached white, and Phantom Hat's hair was equally pale, while the other man had reddish-brown eyes and pale blonde hair. Pointed ears showed through his long silken tresses, showing that the man had probably been an elf before he became a vampire. "Fine," Phantom Hat said coldly, gesturing down toward Nekthat. "Then drink the goblin, or wait until we get back to camp." The blonde man made a disgusted face, revealing the tips of pointed fangs protruding between inhumanly red lips. "Fine, whatever, but when I finally get to stream this crap, I'm telling the world what a jerk you are." Aspen coughed, trying to sound as pathetic and frightened as possible. "Wait, please. Don't you need someone to send back so Rouge knows you have me?" Both vampires paused. "That's true," Phantom Hat muttered. "There's no guild out here, so I can't send her a PM. I don't want to wait until she figures it out on her own, either. I have to get to work in a few hours." Ebony eyes glinting with ruby met Aspen's topaz ones, and Aspen lowered his before the vampire could see the loathing that roiled in his belly. Phantom Hat grunted. 50 from the goblin, and 51 from the man. That should bring you to full, and leave the goblin enough strength to go running to little sister. Hurry up. The other vampire hesitated no longer. With powerful hands, he yanked Nekvat's jaw to the side and began to feed.